This is Rob Long with Martini Shot for The Ankler. In olden times, when a movie or TV script called for an actress, and it was pretty much always an actress, to play a character who wasn't particularly attractive, the plain younger sister role, perhaps, or the overlooked personal assistant, the casting process was pretty simple. You just gave the part to a beautiful actress, and then you made her wear ugly glasses. Then, at the appropriate moment in the story, she inadvertently removes the glasses, and everybody sees just how stunning she really is, and the movie or TV show moved quickly towards its happy and romantically satisfying conclusion. Now, it wasn't always a pair of glasses, sometimes it was just an unflattering hat. Gee, when you took off your hat just now, you're beautiful. Now, this is sexist, of course, and a lot of other bad things, too, I know, but it's the way it works in Hollywood. People on screen are supposed to be gorgeous, even if the script calls for something else. Now, television shows and movies, I don't need to tell you, are not even a bit like real life. In real life, if we're a little or a lot fat or awkwardly unblessed in the looks department or given to bad hair days or blotchy skin, we just can't remove our glasses and win over the object of our romantic obsession. In real life, we're stuck with what we have. In real life, you wear a hat to cover up your receding hairline, not your hidden beauty. And the worst part about it is your friends, if you ask them, will probably lie to you. Look, when the people around us, our friends, our families, and most perilously our spouses, ask us for our honest opinion about their appearance, we must first rapidly calculate their realistic ability to do anything about it. I mean, there's no point in telling someone that they're looking a little pudgy if they're about to walk down the red carpet into a hailstorm of photographers and flashbulbs. But if there's a stray hair blowing awkwardly or a collar that's sticking up, by all means, you know, mention it. The operative rule here is what we in Hollywood call the fix-it rule. If I can fix it, tell me. If I can't, keep your mouth shut. I have a director friend who tells me that when he's asked to give advice to other directors on their rough cuts, that's the first edited assembly of a movie or TV show, his fix-it rule process is always the same. If the movie looks basically sound, then he suggests cuts, you know, trims to certain scenes here and there, maybe a reordered sequence, and a few other specific suggestions that can be accomplished in a couple of keystrokes on the editing software. But if the movie's in real trouble, and if the other director adamantly insists on honest advice, which is always a mistake, he asks to see the deleted scene. Since every movie shoots more, often a lot more footage than ends up in the finished version, it's likely that he will discover that the filmmakers have overlooked some pretty good material. He's often able to make a useful contribution by suggesting that certain moments be added back into the picture. Now, sometimes, of course, it's just a disaster, and the lights in the screening room come up, and the filmmakers look at him expectantly, the desperation clear in their eyes, and his head is filled with a million suggestions. The most crucial being, here's what you guys should do. Build a crude time machine, go back to the moment you decided to make this terrible movie, and stop yourself. But of course, you can't say that. That breaks the fix-it rule. And no friendship or parental relationship or marriage or lawyer, client, doctor, patient arrangement, or really any combination of human interactions is worth pointing out a problem that the other person just cannot fix. So he reverts to his first option. He suggests cuts and trims to certain scenes here and there, maybe a reordered sequence and a few other specific suggestions that can be accomplished in a few keystrokes on the editing software, you see. In other words, he fixes the collar and he straightens the stray hair on the very fat, very unattractive person about to walk down the red carpet. Because, you know, that's about all that can be done at that point. And he puts on a hearty smile and he says, I think it looks great. You guys are in great shape. See, everyone hopes that it's just a matter of someone at some point removing a pair of glasses and seeing the beautiful actress who is hidden beneath them. But that only happens in the movies, not in the making of the movies. Sometimes you really can't fix bad. On the other hand, in creative pursuits, the trick is to look at the bad thing you did and ask yourself what it's telling you. Now, for me, it's often telling me once again that I convinced myself that I was really interested and inspired by a certain project when I really, really wasn't. That all those people telling me that it was a great idea and that I was the right person to do it were correct and that they saw something promising beneath my ugly glasses. And, you know, actually, one of the least meaningful words in the English language is the word creative, because it implies that there's something else, something non-creative, and that the two things need to be separated somehow, as if the creative people are all just walking around thinking creative thoughts while the other half are data entry drones. I'm not sure that anybody really is creative in that sense. I mean, most of what people do in the arts, if I can say that without making us all throw up, is either sitting very still, hoping that it'll soon get dark and everybody will be able to go home, or just grinding it out, like, you know, like hard work. Creative implies some kind of spark, some lightning in a bottle, which of course ignores the hours, say, it takes to put paint on canvas or words on a page. The original idea for Star Trek, the legend goes, was about a Zeppelin in the 19th century. And then someone, maybe it was the original creator, maybe it was even a network executive, said, you know, you could go another way. Okay, bad idea is how most of us who are supposed to be creative begin pitching a script fix or a story moment to a group of colleagues. Okay, not this, obviously, but what about, and then we suggest something fairly lame, although to be honest, no one ever says not this and really means not this. What they mean is, I don't know whether this idea is good or bad, so before I suggest it, I'm just going to dump on it, and thus relieving me of any real responsibility and preventing anyone in this room for thinking that I'm a total hack, because as you recall, I did begin my remarks by saying, okay, this is the hacky way to go. But see, we're all trapped in our own little interior sweatbox, so we don't really know if it's a good idea or not. I mean, a lot of good ideas sound kind of lame when you pitch them. I mean, hundreds of years ago, right around today, did one of our pilgrim forefathers say to his group, okay, not this. I mean, I know this is impractical and everything, but what if we just invited the Native Americans to a dinner party, you know, a potluck thing? Is that dumb? That's dumb, isn't it? And then somebody probably said to his relief, actually, you know, that's kind of a good idea. I mean, it's totally hacky, but who knows? I mean, for them, the whole dinner party idea might seem really new. But even if nobody else rallies around the idea, I mean, what if, for instance, it really is an awful idea? At least now everybody knows what they're all looking for. They are looking for the opposite of that idea. I mean, who knows how the first Thanksgiving was originally pitched? Maybe it was, hey, gang, not this. But let's all go over there to where those Native Americans live and steal their food and burn their camp. And then someone, thankfully, said something like, you know, or maybe we could go another way. Although, as we all know, that's what they eventually did anyway. Because we are all capable of some truly awful work. Can't get around that. That's show business rule number one. It doesn't matter how good you are. You can be a wonderful writer or director or actor, for that matter, and have a string of accomplishments to your name. You could have awards and money and just a great reputation as somebody who does excellent work, but somewhere inside you, somewhere you hope very deep, is a truly awful piece of work. A funny script so unfunny, or a scary script so unscary, a terrible script so unfixable that it's hard to believe that it actually came from you, that you typed it. We all have one, at least, really inexplicably bad piece of work in us, and it's gonna come out, I'm telling you. I mean, it's gonna come out. It's gonna come right on out. The trick is somehow to engineer things so that your really bad stuff, maybe even that one unredeemable piece of work, comes out early in your career before anybody's really paying attention. The slick move is to bury the bad under subsequent layers of good. And if the good stuff is really good, sometimes when people dig up the bad stuff, they look through old files, say, or they sift through your IMDb entry, whatever. Sometimes looking back through the lens of your good stuff, the bad stuff doesn't look so bad. It's got a context. It's in perspective. And then you have really lucked out. And it will be luck, because there is no way of managing this process, no way of finessing the timing here. All you know for sure is this: at some point, you are going to embarrass yourself with some really stinko work. It's like someone has taken one Diet Coke can from the refrigerator and shaken it up for 45 minutes straight, and eventually you are the one who is going to open that can. And I keep saying you and your because I want to involve everyone in this. I want to implicate the world. I want to convince everyone, especially me, that what I'm describing is a universal experience, that talented people can produce truly awful stuff. And the reason I need to make this a global issue and to drag everyone into it is because, I'll be honest, I'll say it first, I have done exactly that. I have written a really terrible script before. Oh, I'm sure it was fine, is what some of you are thinking. You're just being too hard on yourself. You're too critical. I am not being hard on myself. I don't even know how to be hard on myself. The script I'm talking about, the specific script I'm talking about, was embarrassingly awful. It was noticeably bad. It was disappointing to the people who were expecting it to be better or good or even adequate, and worse, it was disappointing to the people who paid for it. And the worst thing about it, and here it really was an outlier, not just from me, but from show business in general, the worst thing about it was that it wasn't really fixable. And in show business, you know, almost everything is fixable. Almost everything. But knowing what to bury in a deep hole and what to keep tinkering with, that's the difference often between a long and a short career. The people with the short careers, they're the ones that think that that one really bad piece of work is fatal. It's the end. It's the sign that they're untalented. The ones with the really long careers, they know it's just a matter of time. And that's it for this week. Next week, suddenly, it all starts up again. For The Ankler, this is Rob Long with Martini Shot.